Today's Issues continues on AFR with your host, Tim Wildman, President of the American Family Association.
Hey, welcome back, everybody, to today's issues on American Family Radio. We got rid of Debbie Downer 8. Good night. Remember what your mama said. If you ain't got anything good to say, don't say anything at all.
Well, that's going to cut down on our show, isn't it?
Duly noted, Ed. No, I'm just teasing.
Have a five-minute
show.
As
I say, you know, we got to talk about the good, bad, and the ugly. It's not always good. Sometimes it's ugly. But, you know, life goes on, and there is always hope, and God is on the throne.
I
don't want to be trite. I'm not trying to be. I'm trying to over-spiritualize things. And there's still a lot yet to fight for our country. We can never give up. If we completely give up and despair and quit, then there is no, then we can't say anything, right? So, and with politics, and I'm going to let you talk in 15 minutes.
And, well, besides, you're saying all the stuff
well,
I was going to say.
With politics and government, there's always another fight tomorrow, and it's eternal. Guess what? You're never gonna completely win, and you're never gonna completely lose. In my that's what I've observed
in this life.
In this life, so you can. I always tell people, whatever happens today, it's incumbent on us individually as Christians to get up tomorrow and do the right thing. And then guess what? The day after that, do the right thing. And the day after that, do the right thing by following Jesus Christ, by being a good patriot, by loving your country, trying to preserve our freedoms and liberty and our way of life. Why? For our children and our grandchildren. We can't just lay down and quit or completely despair when we have that at stake. So that's my sermon. And you don't even have to social distance. Go ahead, Ed.
I was just going to say, and a lot of Christians don't think about this, I think, despair is a sin. Despair is a sin because you have made a conscious decision to believe that God doesn't count, that God doesn't matter in your situation. And that's why despair is a sin. It is a form of unbelief. And I think even in terms of our own history with regards to the founding of this nation, think of the Revolutionary War. Tim, you know this because you've gone on these spiritual heritage tours with Steve McDowell, and you've visited some of these sites. But when you go to a place like Valley Forge, you're talking about maybe the absolute bottom, rock bottom of the effort to get free. And at Valley Forge, the man who would become president got on his knees in the snow and prayed to Almighty God for God's intervention. So I just want to encourage people, yeah, it looks grim and it looks dark right now, but to despair of the future of our country, this thing turning around, is to say, I don't believe God can make a difference. And that is the sin of unbelief. And I want to encourage Christians, if you're at that place, you just need to get in your Bible. And you need to read some American history. You read about when we were attacked at Pearl Harbor. Right. And the opening year or two of our efforts in the Pacific were grim. We just got to remember God makes a difference. He makes all the difference in the world. Our job is to be salt and light and to be faithful. That's what your dad always used to say. God has not called us to be successful. He's called us to be faithful. You do what is right because it is always the right time to do what is right. So that's sermon number two, folks.
I mean, Steve Jordahl. Good morning, Steve.
Good morning. That brings up a question. If I'm worried that I'm despairing, am I guilty of two sins?
Well, yeah, technically, if you want to add them up.
I tell you, Steve was a deep thinker.
Yes.
Yeah. Didn't I?
Worry and despair. Could be.
Have you heard about this G5 thing?
Yes.
Steve?
You were listening.
I was, yes. Okay. I don't know which two countries that President Trump's going to excise, but by the way, that was a good Trump you did.
My son does an even better Trump. I just try to keep up. Anyway, what stories have you got for us?
I wanted to start with the story of contrast. This is amazing. The left, we've seen often how they are quick to genuflect to the political correctness. I wanted to play you something that happened in CHOP, which is the new place in
Capitol
Seattle.
Capitol Hill Occupied Protest or something?
I wrote it down. It's the Capitol Hill Organized Protest.
Organized
Zone.
Protest. Okay.
Yes. And an MSNBC reporter was down there reporting on this thing, and he had been kind of hearing what other people said about how it's not violent. It's, it's booze, and it's like
It's festive.
It's festive. It's
one
like
news
a,
media said.
It's like a block party,
it's
right?
It's a festive zone.
Well, I want you to hear, when he gets some pushback from that, how quickly MSNBC and he turn tail. Listen to this. This is cut 9.
Now you've seen essentially almost like a street festival type atmosphere. A street festival type atmosphere.
No.
With a very
It is not a street festival.
With a very intentional purpose.
It is not a street festival. It is not a street festival. Do not say that.
Please.
Shame on
not.
You for saying that. Learn right now. It is not a street festival.
All of us are suffering from PTSD in our own country.
Would you just let him know, because we do have to move on, but would you just let him know, we hear him loud and clear, this is not a festival. This is a social movement.
Oh, I mean, they were so quick.
Oh, that's pathetic. I want those two, the news anchor and the reporter, tell them to turn their man cards in right now.
Right?
That was shameful.
I know who to give them to.
Who?
Not man cards, but. So do you remember yesterday we played the audio of these two women who were in the CHOP at the zone and were witnessing for Christ? And Tim, you mentioned how brave they were.
Absolutely.
Turns out, I had no idea. I'm going to play you some more. By the way, we found out their names. They are evangelists Bevelyn Beattie and Edmi Cavanes, or Cavanes. And I'm going to play a little bit of some of what you may have heard yesterday, but then a part that you didn't hear that I didn't know until, listen to these women. This is cut 7.
Something about LGBTQ. When blacks really don't support that, we're conservative. We're really not about that. Not only that, we don't support abortion. We about workers. This is the black culture. We ain't even about that. Not only that, we not about feminism.
No, we're not.
Black women marry their husbands and respect their husbands. That's what we on. But yet these people are hijacking our movement, the Democratic Party. They're trying to hijack us. No.
Jesus Christ is the way, the truth, and the life. No one can get to the Father except through him.
Are you here for Jesus? Or
I'm
here for
Jesus. Jesus is what I'm here for.
May I ask you, are you here for Jesus, which you can pray for every day, or are you here for the people who have died
You're here for the wrong reason.
He didn't back down.
No, I know it.
You are here for the wrong reason, this guy said, if you're here to talk about Jesus.
Yep. I saw her. I saw one of these ladies on Laurie Ingham last night.
Yeah.
Just she would make Ray Comfort proud. She's a bold.
We'll preach anywhere, anytime.
Bold.
She makes me proud to be a believer.
Yeah.
Yeah. I saw it. But anyway, yeah, it was very good. Let's talk for just a minute, Steve, about this story out of New York City. Many people maybe have seen the video. It's a elderly woman on her walker, using her walker in New York City in the broad daylight, walking down the street on the sidewalk, or not in the street, but by herself. And this man, it looks like to me he's in his 20s or
30s. I think he's 31.
31. This man comes walking by her and just reaches out and punches her in the face and knocks her down on the ground, obviously unprovoked, and then she hits her head on the fire hydrant, and the guy just keeps on walking.
Yeah.
And you're sitting there watching that going, that really? That just happened? And so what you can go watch it. So as it turns out, this guy, it's on the Fox
News. It's on Fox.
It's on the Fox News website. As it turns, go ahead, talk about that.
So it appears that he was walking up behind this woman, and she was elderly, I understand.
No, he wasn't walking behind
they
her.
They were passing, coming towards each other.
All right. So, but he kind of just shoved her in the head, and she lost her balance and fell over. It turns out that this punk is 31 years old, like you said. His name is Rashid Brimage. And he's been arrested. It turns out he's got quite a long rap sheet, according to the police. They didn't list all of it, but she was 92 years old.
No, 100 arrests. That's my point
in
bringing this up, is because this was 100 times this fella had been arrested.
Right.
And he's walking the streets of New York. And I'm just going, how many times do you get, when you have a liberal city like New York, I guess you have unlimited arrest before you... Do you not have to stay in prison for anything?
Do you remember
in jail?
New York City was the De Blasio was the one that did away with all bail. You don't have.
But that's recent. But that's recent. This guy, since 2005, has been arrested 103 times. He was convicted of sexual misconduct in 2012, then arrested for two more sex offenses in 2014. This guy is a serial offender.
But I mean, I'm just asking: is this common? Is this common where you can have dozens and dozens, even 100 arrests?
I believe so.
And you're just walking around? I mean, what do you have to do? To me, you know, I'm just thinking, if a guy comes before the judge on number 76 and he says, I'm sorry, I'm not going to do it again, I'm not going to believe him.
Right.
I mean, maybe judges' hands are tied and they can't keep people in prison. And I'm not saying all these 100 were felonies or whatever there were some of them that were mentioned that were pretty serious crimes that this guy committed. But anyway,
he has been convicted as a sex offender. So that's pretty. Mm-hmm. Now some of them were more petty crimes.
Yeah.
This guy, one of the last times he's been arrested, he failed to notify authorities that he had changed his address and had to register as a sex offender. So this is a guy that is in somebody's neighborhood because he's a sex offender and has not registered. The people don't know he's there.
Yeah. We put this on our Facebook page, by the way, that video. It's pretty shocking. It's on our Today's Issues Facebook page. Just check it out. You're listening to the radio program Today's Issues on American Family Radio. Steve, next story.
Our president gets a lot of heat for his tweets, and people say he's unhinged, out of control, and doesn't have a temper. There is a side, and I've heard this from multiple people that have met President Trump in private and when he's not politicking, and say he's the most considerate, kind, thoughtful person that they've ever met, or among them. And I wanted to share with you a phone call that he had made. He called the mother of several family members of those who have been killed recently due to some violence, and he was speaking with them, the mother of Ahmaud Arbery. Do you remember her name is Wanda Cooper Jones? Ahmaud Arbery was the kid in Atlanta.
Young man in
Atlanta who was jogging.
Not in Atlanta, in the southern part of Georgia.
Okay.
Excuse me for interrupting.
No. It's important.
And I think this was an in-person meeting at the White House yesterday. More than a phone call.
Okay. I should probably read this before I come in, but yes. So,
or just look at me. I got all the answers.
There you go. Okay. We'll do that. But he was speaking with her, and I wanted to play you what she said. She was on Fox a little bit later talking about this meeting. I think what we're about to hear is a description of maybe the side of President Trump that we don't hear often and a side that is worth noting. So this is cut four.
It was very, very emotional throughout the whole conference. He was very compassionate. He showed major concerns for all families, not just one family, but for all families. I can say that President Trump was very receiving. He listened and he addressed each and every family accordingly.
Yeah, they were at the White House yesterday. because President was announcing the police reforms that he was including in his executive order, and he met with the families of some of these folks who've been killed by police officers, or in the case of Aubrey, what's his last name?
Ahmaud Arbery.
That was his mother you just heard. He was the one who was killed in Georgia by the two men.
Who tracked him down. He's jogging down through their neighborhood. Right. They grabbed their guns.
The vigilantes, right, basically. So I thought that was very gracious on that lady's part right there, what she said about President Trump. And the meeting that he held with these families was off camera.
Yes.
It wasn't for show. That's the meeting that she was just describing. So let me ask you this, related to this. I mentioned the White House was yesterday. I wish Abe was in here. Not that you guys aren't capable of answering this, but he signed an executive order with reforms.
Mm-hmm.
What power does that have? I don't consider executive orders very powerful at all. I consider them more, well, sometimes they can be for temporarily, but I consider them more to be a demonstration of how I feel about something, what I would do if I did control the legislature, so to speak. You know what I'm saying? Or do you not know what I'm saying?
Well, I do. I can't answer.
I don't like executive orders very much myself. But
well, here's just a couple of things. First of all, both the Senate and the House have put forth their own versions of legislation. So that's separate from the president's executive order. So they're two different. The kind of Republican-controlled Senate, the Democrat-controlled House, have their own versions of how we should proceed, and I think the Democrats want to remove some of this immunity that police officers have from lawsuits. So then with the president's executive order, here's the thing that's odd about executive orders. I would tend to agree with you, Tim. I don't like executive orders if the government was run according to the Constitution. But we have this huge executive branch now with all these different departments and all these bureaucracies that do have their tentacles even in daily life, even in the state and local, down to the state and local level. And so an executive order can carry some weight. I'm not sure what the executive order orders,
for example, I voted for President Trump. I'm going to vote for him again in November. I support the vast majority of his policies and the positions that he holds, I share. So that's not in question. But for instance, for the President of the United States to say, I hereby declare chokeholds outlawed, unless it's the officer's life isn't threatened, that's none of President Trump's business.
Well,
in my opinion, that's none of any president, Obama, Trump, anybody. Well, if you can do that, that's legislating from the White House.
Well, if you have an Office of Civil Rights, which the Department of Justice does. Now, again, I'm not sure exactly where this executive order goes, but if you say you are violating the civil rights, and then I'll throw it to you, Steve, you're violating the civil rights of individuals in this country if you subject them to chokeholds, then the Department of Justice can get involved. It may not, it might be that it shouldn't be that way, but I'm saying that can carry a lot of weight because of the size and influence of the federal government.
Do you see my point?
Yes, I do. But
for whether you have chokeholds or not. By the way, as I understand it, most police forces don't use chokeholds anyway. Who does that unless their life is threatened? But
right.
But let's just say you want to outlaw chokeholds. That's for a city, or a county, or a state, or the United States Congress, I guess, to address, although that's the last place. To me, it's a state thing. But I guess in terms of violating someone's civil rights, I could see your point where the federal government might get involved. But even that, to me, should be from the Congress, not from the White House. Go ahead, Steve. Do you have any You care about that?
Well, I do. I reported on this yesterday, and in fact, I have the executive order in front of me. What the president does control is the purse. And this particular executive order had several things it wanted to do. It was encouraging police departments to be independently certified as having passed training on de-escalation and use of force. And this is the I'm reading here. The Attorney General shall, as appropriate and consistent with applicable laws, allocate Department of Justice discretionary grant funding only to those states and local law enforcement agencies that have sought or are in the process of seeking appropriate credentials from a reputable independent credentialing body. So it you get money if you take if you send your police to this series of places that will credential you as having taken this training.
Training
on de-escalation of how to use proper use of force at those places. Those individual training agencies will take a look at things like chokeholds and everything. The executive order didn't go into that much detail of that kind of thing.
That's what I'm saying. Most of these executive orders by Democrats and presidents to me are just perfunctory. They're for the cameras. This is just me. People may disagree, and I could be wrong. Maybe Abe can comment on this later. We'll ask him about this on these executive orders. But if presidents can just pass executive orders that do precisely what legislation does, and do it that's supposed to be lasting. I'm not talking about something maybe that's temporary. That just seems unconstitutional.
But that's the problem. Is that the way the federal government operates in 2020 is unconstitutional. So the system's broken. The fact that local law enforcement or states get grant money from the federal government for law enforcement
and now it's conditioned on whoever the president is and what he believes.
So the fact that the president can issue an executive order directing funding from the federal government to the state of Georgia is unconstitutional. The federal government should have nothing to do with that. But
one of the other things that this executive order does is it sets up a database that allows police departments to go and check and see who you're hiring, because they were having the problem of rogue police officers going from department to department, kind of like Catholic priests did in that scandal.
Right.
And so this sets up a database where every police department can go and you list if a person has been reprimanded or his record is there.
That should have already been done. That's called listing your references.
Here's
what you do. If you're a police chief and you want to hire somebody that worked in another state, you call that other police chief and say, what do you know about this guy?
Yeah, but this is the federal
How hard
government.
Is that?
But this is the federal government doing it.
Well, why do they have to babysit that?
That's exactly. We're going to the real problems in our country, which is that we are no
longer
operating. We are no longer operating according to the Constitution.
I'm Christopher Columbus of the Constitution today, right?
This is why we're talking about a Supreme Court.
Don't tear down my statue.
Legislating from the bench. Why shouldn't they do it if nobody else is following the Constitution? Does that make you more or less sad today?
It reminds me of the line in the song "Bye Bye American Pie."
Don McLean.
Yeah, I asked her for some happy news. Remember that line, where he stops and pauses, says all these bad things are happening. I asked her for some happy news.
Yeah,
we need some happy news, ladies and gentlemen.
We do,
and
we didn't get to it. We're getting to it tomorrow.
Tomorrow, okay.
We got to have
it's Happy News Thursday.
No, we do have one story we didn't get to. I'm sorry, I might have hijacked the.
All right,
the good story, the funny story.
We hope you have a wonderful day.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Warm puppies,
rainbows,
and a nice slice of pizza.
We'll see you tomorrow, everybody.